You're listening to Freed on Business. To talk to Jim and his guests, call 305-541-2350. That's 305-541-2350. Now, back to your host, Jim Freed.
I got him. Well, I can't say his number, so take me off and just come get it. All right, well, in the meantime, we're going to be waiting. We're going to coordinate with KC. This is my bad. I gave a typo. There's KC calling me again. Much tension or pressure?
You are killing me. You're killing me over here.
I'm going to come through. He's calling now. Don't worry. Oh, I made a typo on when I sent him a text. That's all right.
That's why I'm here.
Why?
So you don't have to go off the air to handle these things. All right, I got it.
Well, the person,
What can I do?
All right, well, we're going to have Casey on in a minute. What we're going to talk about with Casey is the impact of all of these tariffs and what their impact is on the economy and real estate. We're going to have a history lesson. Casey, are you there? Earth to Casey.
I'm on.
I'm so sorry. I texted you the wrong number, my friend.
No problem.
So listen, it's the halftime report. It's the halftime of the year. I took up a lot of time with the misconceptions there. So tell me, what's going on in the economy? What's going on with these tariffs? Because the last time we had a big bunch of tariffs was almost a historic result. Well, it was a historic result, wasn't it?
You're right. You're right, Jimmy. You know, a lot of folks, it's been over four generations since we had to deal with this type of stuff. But what the heck? June 1930. Good time. You were around then, right? Well, it was the Tariff Act of 1930.
My mom wasn't even a glimmer in my grandma's eye at that point. But I remember reading about this stuff. I really didn't understand what happened, but the Great Depression seemed to just settle on us, and it was all because people drew lines in the sand and wouldn't deal with each other, I think. Is this sort of what happened?
You're right, and I'll oversimplify the whole thing, but bottom line, we did such a great job out of World War I teaching Europe how to be productive in agriculture that they became overly productive. They lowered their prices. That upset the U.S., we felt we needed to protect our agricultural industry, so we decided we would put tariffs in place, and then that expanded. Everybody piled on to about 890 tariffs by the time President Hoover signed the act, and off to the races we went till we had 24% unemployment, 500,000 people living in Hoovervilles, and there's some correlations here. It started around overproduction of one area, agriculture. Sound familiar to today? Overproduction of, say, manufacturing, e-commerce, retail, get protectionistic, and off to the races we go.
Well, how about the similarities between the presidents and their historic experience?
I'll leave the politics to you, Jim.
Oh, it's not politics. They were just both businessmen. They're the only two presidents that didn't come up through the political class.
No, you're exactly right.
And it's not politics. Right. It's just an accurate description of history. I'm purple. I don't take sides. I'm for America.
Well, and I'll add one more dimension to it. So this is our first Fed chair. It's not an economist. So you put the correlation between President Hoover, President Trump, and a first Fed chair that's not an economist. It's a real business person. So we should have all the right people thinking this thing through, right?
Well, you would hope so. And I hope they do get it right and that they listen to their staffers, because a good business person listens to their staff, creates a plan, and then executes the plan in a consistent and professional way.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. I think that, you know, the president's right. We've got to deal with the trade imbalances. China, we've let them walk all over us in the World Trade Organization. We have a lot that we have to protect here in the state.
Agreed.
Florida with agriculture, and
agreed.
You have more ports than anybody in the United States or North America. So he's right to tackle an issue that's just been neglected and abused by prior administrations on both sides of the aisle.
Agreed.
But it's not going to be without its pain.
Well, look, my niece is running for ag commissioner here in Florida. I know she's got opinions and positions about the impact that these tariffs have on our farmers. And I really do think that we need to take proactive measures to make sure that we don't fall into the rut that happened the last time and everybody gets, reactive to each other and problems occur. We have to think this through and make it happen. But yes, I agree. I think that we've had a problem with China and stealing our intellectual property and all the other stuff that's well publicized. And yes, we've had a certain strategy that we've executed in the past. Maybe it's worked. Maybe it hasn't. Well, we'll see what happens this time. But let's talk about what you think is going on in the economy today, Casey.
So let's start with interest rates. So let's pivot right into the thick of it. So yep. The Fed's given us its second rate hike, as I told you. They would raise in June. I think they'll give us at least two more rate hikes. And the thing we better pay attention to it is twofold. One, we're starting to see some of the spillover impact into housing and builder sentiment. And we've seen very disappointing numbers on starts, down 12%, on new home sales and existing home sales, each down almost double-digit numbers.
Why?
So the builders are concerned on a number of fronts. Number one, they can't make the numbers work anymore. The margins, we talked about the costs on our last show, the costs of labor and materials are rising. Now you add, I just closed on a little house over in Alabama, and the interest rate is up 75 basis points from where if I'd bought it last year.
Listen,
so someone on the margin that can make that difference.
Listen, I see the interest rates on CDs have gone from like 1% to 3% in just months.
Yeah, the banks, you got a good banker there. Most of them are still, the banks have had, a number of rate increases, and they've passed about less than 10% of those rate increases on the deposits. But you have a good banker there. But most of the big, especially the big banks, have not done it. But the thing I'm worried about on interest rates, the Fed, I think, is going to continue. The inflation pressures are a lot more than what the CPI is leading us to believe. We've got about 25 to 30% in energy. Gas prices are up 65 cents a gallon over last year. They're going to continue to march up. Housing costs are up. We're on a third straight year of over 7%, 6 to 7% home price appreciation. Costs and materials are up. Wage inflation is up. The small businesses are saying they love the world. They love this economy. They want to expand, but they've run into one problem. A, they can't find the labor, and B, they can't afford it. So if you think that there isn't wage inflation and skilled labor, there is. So, and I think with the tariffs, we're going to see the food inflation there. The other piece that concerns me on these interest rates is, as the Fed raises rates in this tariff environment, what happens is, since we're the reserve currency of the world, our dollar gets stronger, which amplifies the impact of tariffs. So the rest of the world's currencies, China's, Brazil's, Latin America, Europe's, their currencies go down. So that dilutes or offsets the impact of our tariffs, and our rising dollar amplifies the impact of their tariffs. So when Trump is, kind of barking out against his own Fed chair that he picked, what he's really realizing is there's also a currency implication when the Fed raises rate hikes in this tariff environment. So it amplifies it through the currency exchange process.
Wow, that's pretty technical, but it just doesn't sound like it's a good thing for anybody.
It just means when you're doing your cap rate calculation on those deals that you're going to buy, or you're going to help them get all refinanced, Jimmy, I wouldn't be buying them at or factoring in that everything's going to be wonderful at a 4 or 5 cap rate. I think that the gig of the compressed cap rates is pretty much over, except for maybe industrial. And I think that you'd be best to be putting in a fudge factor, using that old mortgage band of equity, looking at what happens if my debt piece rises and what happens to my cap rate. I think the cap rates are going to be drifting upward.
Well, I think that they have to, just from a mechanical standpoint. But let's talk about the treasuries. What's going on with the 10-year treasury, and how is that being accepted into the world, which is flush with all this debt?
Right. So we saw early on last year, I said, the end of last year, people thought I was crazy. I said the 10-year treasury would rise to 3% by the spring. I missed it by about a week or 10 days. I'll work on my accuracy there. And then it settled back down. And part of what settled it back down was we began to see Italy and the European kind of debt crisis start to emerge its head a little bit, as you still have 9 nations who have government debt issuances that are negative yielding. As we raise rates and it attracts capital to our debt instruments, the rest of the world has to start to look at getting rid of their quantitative easing or cutting entitlement costs. So it settled back down because of Italy, but it started back up. And the thing that concerns me the most to watch in the 10-year treasury, I still think it's going to drift up, and we'll see a 3.5 10-year treasury by the end of the year, is look at the bid to cover ratio on the 10-year treasury. So what that is how many bidders there are per note that they have to sell. And typically a healthy bond market sees about 2.5 to 3 or more bids for every note that it wants to issue. In the latest issuance that we just had, government barely had a 2-to-1 bid cover. So that meant we barely had a competitive bid for each new bid. And what that tells us is there isn't the demand. And I think there's also a spillover effect on these tariffs. When we tell the rest of the world we're mad at them, we hate you, we're going to put tariffs on you like us, they don't buy our debt. And with $21 trillion in debt and going each day higher, and we're over 100% GDP, we also need the rest of the world to buy our debt. So my concern is that there's a warning sign in the bid-to-cover ratio of the 10-year Treasury that Treasury is going to be coming back to the Fed saying we need higher rates to sell this debt, that not only from the debt that we're adding on, but also the Fed selling down its balance sheet. And so as it tries to liquidate and get rid of its debt, we're flooding the market with long-term debt issuance, and the market's starting to tell us through the bid-to-cover ratio they're not biting.
Well, Casey, we've got to take a break. And when we come back, I wanted to talk about maybe a way that we can address some of the crises that's occurring. I know you just did a paper on adaptive reuse. I think that could at least solve some of the problem by hopefully giving people a lower cost basis to build their deals on.
You bet.
All right. Well, Wanda, take us away, and we'll be right back with some really great thoughts and ideas from Casey Conway, the head of real estate at the Culver House School of Business up at University of Alabama. We're staying in the SEC, though, aren't we, Casey?
Roll Tide.
Okay, we'll be doing that. I'm going to say go Gators back at you. Let's rock a little music, and then we'll be back with my good friend Casey Conway. Oh, yeah. Different strokes for different folks. We're going to talk about different ways to use your existing